Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome back to the Leaving Eden podcast. It is a spooky, spooky time of the year. Happy Halloween. Sadie, how you doing?
I am doing great. We are bringing possibly the scariest content that we have ever brought to the podcast for you today.
This content is so scary that it is literally traumatizing to some people.
It is, but hopefully we can present it in a way that is not going to be too upsetting for our listeners. I think we can do it. I have confidence.
As always, we are your hosts. My name is Gavriel Hakohen.
And I'm Sadie Carpenter.
And we are here to present with you a review of, I don't know how else to put it, a bad movie. We watched a bad movie and we're going to talk about it.
Is this movie not so bad that it's good?
This movie is like so bad that it's good, and then it's so bad after that that it's bad again, and then it's so bad after that that it's good again.
That is absolutely correct. Thank you so much for that.
the movie that we're talking about now is The Burning Hell. But even if you have not watched the movie yet, which you can watch for free, it's up on YouTube. It's like an hour if you want to go watch that movie. Even if you have not watched that movie, this will still be an interesting episode to listen to, because we're going to talk about hell, the teachings about hell, and all that sort of stuff in general. So it's going to be a fun movie to talk about. We're just kind of using the movie as like a way to kind of broach these topics, because there's some stuff that's represented that Sadie's going to understand that I don't quite understand, and she's going to have to explain some stuff to me, which is going to be fun.
And I am going to cover... I'm going to go ahead and do my trigger warning now because you brought that up. In general, we talk about a lot of potentially triggering topics on this show, including but not limited to suicide and mental health, racism, misogyny, PTSD, PTSD symptoms, child abuse, mental, physical, sexual abuse, and spiritual abuse, including guilt, shame, and fear. In most episodes, we mention at least a few of these themes, but we try to avoid graphic detail unless it's important to the story that we're telling. And we do our best to give the audience a heads up before we get into detail on any of these topics. This episode includes talk about hell. We won't be speaking about it as if it is a reality, because that's not something that aligns with either one of our personal views.
No.
So we're not going to be preaching to you about how to avoid hell, but beyond that, we are not going to be treating this as a real topic, so that may help with people who are traumatized by this. I'm going to give you a list of things that are going to be mentioned Let's see. Demons, maggots, fire, preaching, altar calls, the song, Just As I Am. We won't be singing it. I know it's so traumatizing to so many people. A motorcycle accident, decapitation, general torture in the hell scenes. This movie is extremely...
You forgot bad makeup and bad costume. Bad
makeup. Well, if that triggers somebody. This movie is, it's funny because it's corny and it's overdone. And I don't want to pressure somebody to listen to this episode if it's not a good idea for them. But I do want you to know that we are very much treating this as a corny, funny thing. And I will give you a heads up before there are a couple gross out moments in this film. I'll give you a heads up before we get there.
So this movie, we were talking about it, I think, and Sadie said that it was a 4 out of 10 on the traumatic scale.
That's about what I got. Like there were moments where it kind of, ooh, that got me.
But it's a 10 out of 10 on the entertaining scale.
So usually immediately after the moment that kind of triggered me, there would be something that was so hilarious that it would snap me out of it.
Yeah. That's what we're going to talk about today. The Burning Hell, a 1974 film. Before we get into that, the Leaving Eden podcast is the podcast about my BFF and co-host Sadie Carpenter's life in and escape from the Independent Fundamental Baptist cult, the cult in which she was raised. We talk about this cult. We talk about other cults. We talk about religion. We talk about fundamentalism. We talk about the real and present threat that cults and cult ideologies pose to society as a whole. And it is our goal to promote freedom of mind, freedom of thought, and freedom of religion. So if you like our show, if you are a fan of our show, there's a couple of things that you can do to help us out. You can join our Patreon, which is patreon.com/leavingedenpodcast. A great place that you can find extended and uncensored and ad-free versions of most of our episodes, including today's episode, because you know we're going to go off the rails and you're going to want to hear where that train goes. it's going to go off the track just like Ken's motorcycle did when he got decapitated.
Spoilers, Gavi. Spoilers.
And you can join our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/EdenExodus. You can join our subreddit, which is reddit.com/r/EdenExodus. Anything else before I thank the Faith Promise Missions to your patrons?
Nothing comes to mind. I think we can do that.
Okay. Well, we have many Faith Promise Missions to your patrons, but we have two. Count them too. I gave it all to your patrons. They are Kathleen Moncrief and Melissa Mosley.
Thank you so much to Kathleen and Melissa for supporting the show.
It's really amazing that you guys support us in such a big way. It's fantastic, and we're just so appreciative of you. And we are also appreciative of our Faith Promise Missions to your patrons. And your names are Alex Todd, Allison MacArthur, Anisha Patel, Brittany, Brooke Tully, Carrie R., Krissa, Crystal Patterson, Dear Ethan Hansen, the musical, Eleanor Donahue, Elizabeth DeWorth, Emery Fairlosser, Hannah Ross, Hope Norum. I'm just here to send Sadie true crime podcast suggestions. Is that my actual BFF? Meg isn't my actual BFF anymore. Meg is just here to send Sadie true crime podcast suggestions.
I'm sure she's still your actual BFF as well.
Okay, well, she changed my...
We can't let people put like a paragraph in there because then we'd never get through this.
Yeah, that's true. Jen Kaharski, Jessica Tambo, Jonna, Kat Hedberg, Kay Terwee, Catherine Schneider, Kristen Marie, Lauren Vanderwall, Linda Morgan, Lindsay Goss, Lorena Watson, Michaela, the yoga pants wearing Subaru driver, Madeline Antrim, Madeline Cusick, Mary Martin, aka the actor who played Peter Pan on Broadway, Megan Arndt, Mike Smith, Miranda Day, Rachel Bernadowitz, Rebecca Hoyt, Rob the Methodist, Sarah Reese, Shane Horton, Stephanie Johnson, Susie, Tara McNamara, the Lady Rabbi, Tiffany Enderby, Walnut, Son of Walnut, and Wes the Cowboy.
Thank you
so much.
Yeah, thank you so much to our Faith Promise Missions, to your patrons, and to everybody who supports our show on Patreon.
And to everybody who supports our show by listening to it and recommending it to your friends, your family, your coworkers, your enemies, your...
Yeah, I see some of you sometimes. Sometimes I'm lurking in a Facebook group, and I see you.
I see it on Reddit sometimes, which is a lot of fun, just to see my mm-hmm. name pop up.
It's a real treat when we come up in the wild, so to speak.
Yeah, every time I do that, I every time I see it, I screenshot it and send it to Sadie.
We send it to each other. We celebrate that. So we see all of you who are supporting us in non-financial ways as well, because that still helps a lot and it still means a lot.
Yeah, and we wouldn't be where we are today without you guys doing that. So let's get into the burning hell.
The burning hell. Okay.
Where little children are falling.
Where little children... Thanks. You got me and Heather on that one. Good job. So I want to tell you like what this movie is before we get into the plot, if I can do that.
It. Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So there was a preacher from Mississippi in the 1960s and 70s, and his name is Estes Perkle. That is his real name. That is 100% his real name.
Sounds like a Dr. Seuss name.
E-S-T-U-S, Estes Perkle, P-I-R-K-L-E. Y'all are probably going to hear my accent come out in this episode. Just, I should probably give the disclaimer because I've been listening to all these Southern people. So Estes Perkle was a Southern Baptist minister from Mississippi, and he had the idea to make some Christian propaganda movies. The big one that he did, hold on, let me make sure I'm getting the title right. If Footmen Tire You, What Will Horses Do? This movie came out in 1971, and it was an anti-communist Christian propaganda film.
That's a long title. That's a...
Mm-hmm. this guy...
Box office success or nah?
I don't think flop. It ever went to a box office. I think it was never actually meant. None of Perkle's movies were actually meant to be distributed the way that typical movies are. This was shown at churches and Christian revival meetings and Christian campgrounds, and it was kind of meant to be an internal document, if you will. And it's only in recent years that these movies that Perkle made have gotten a little bit more mainstream recognition. So the director that Perkle worked with for all of the movies that he made was this guy named Ron Ormond. So Ron Ormond and Estes Perkle make a very interesting partnership. Ron Ormond was a director of exploitation films in the 1960s. One non-Christian film I read about that Ormond directed was described as, quote, a Mondo crossed with a sex ed movie and, quote, a mixtape for the mentally disturbed. So,
interesting.
For those whose husbands have forced them to watch Natural Born Killers, like mine did, me, this is like the movies that inspired Natural Born Killers. If you haven't seen, like, I've seen a fair few of this genre of movies because my husband is a marvelous weirdo who I love. But if you haven't seen a lot of like Mondo or exploitation movies, if you've seen Natural Born Killers, it's kind of like that. Like that's the genre here.
I mean, if you've seen like a lot of Tarantino films, a lot of his films are very, very, very inspired by exploitation film from the 60s and the 70s.
Right. They're just a little bit watered down and better special effects and better writing and a more coherent storyline.
That's really it.
Yeah. And more feet, of course, because it's f-ing Tarantino. So Ron Ormond was this director who did this very specific genre of movie. He had a literal come to Jesus moment. He got born again and he was like, oh, I can't be making these movies about busty women in compromising situations and drugs anymore. I guess I should make movies about Jesus now. So that's what he did. And he was shooting these Christian movies where he partnered with Estes Perkle in very, very much the same style of filmmaking that he was using in his previous career before he got born again. So it is a really interesting movie just from that, I think. I have seen Orman's Christian filmography referred to as the Grindhouse Gospel, which I really think is the perfect moniker.
Really?
The Grindhouse Gospel. Is That's that not so it? Cool. That is it.
That's a great band name.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
So that is the style of movie that we are talking about here, and the type of movie that we're talking about here. Also, I have one other thing before we jump in. Hold on. The Burning Hell, another thing that makes it really unique is that almost every actor in the film is a person from one of the churches that was involved in making this movie. Some of these people were from Mobile, Alabama, and went to, I believe it was Dauphin Way Baptist Church in Mobile, Alabama. And my grandparents knew some of the people in this movie. Like, my dad grew up knowing some of the extras in this movie.
Wow.
So this was something that he was always really interested in, because he would sit and try to pick out the people who were friends with his parents who, like, appeared in this movie.
That's so fun. Yeah. That's hilarious.
So I have that personal connection. And of course, I always love hearing a beautiful Southern accent, even if it's coming from Moses. But we'll get there. We'll get there. Let's talk about the plot of the movie.
Yeah. So this movie, the format of the movie is that it seems like what it will be is it's like Estes Perkel is like the star of the film. Basically, most of what he does in this movie is he's giving a sermon at the church. And then when he breaks out to do a sermon illustration or tell a story from the Bible, there will be a cutaway and people will be acting out that scene.
Right. So the whole movie is framed in this sermon that Perkel is giving. There are guest appearances from other preachers who will just kind of show up as a talking head to validate a point that Perkel is making. And then it will also cut away to biblical scenes as Perkel's voice narrates the biblical scene. You'll see people acting it out. And then there is a subplot about these two hippies, Tim and Ken. I want to talk about the opening scene before we get to Tim and Ken.
Please do, because the opening scene was...
So the opening scene is a choir of white people in very, very 60s outfits with, like, the giant bouffant and everything, standing... How would you describe... Are they standing in, like, a... What is the word for this? Where there's just fire coming out of the ground?
I don't know. I didn't know that there was a word for that.
There is. So they're standing in what looks like a valley, but there is randomly fire coming out of the ground around them, like if a coal mine underground catches on fire or an oil well underground catches on fire. It kind of looks like that. And they're singing a hymn, and the entire first 2 or 3 minutes of the film is just these people standing very still singing a hymn with fire. And then the second scene of the film is R.J. Lee making the first guest appearance, like celebrity preacher guest appearance. All of my ex-fundies already know who R.J. Lee is. He was a really big name IFB preacher, very old school. R.J. Lee is interesting. He was a leader in fundamentalism along with John R. Rice and J. Frank Norris. Before
he was the guy in the white suit, right?
Mm-hmm. Before Jack Hyles came along. And... when Jack Hyles was still like the new generation of fundamentalist before Hyles became the leader, the leaders were people like R.J. Lee, John R. Rice, and J. Frank Norris. So if you're thinking back to the Bob Jones episode where we talked about the fundamentals, R.A. Torrey was one of the guys that wrote the fundamentals. And then there's a generation gap between those guys and Jack Hyles. And R.J. Lee is one of those people that was really instrumental during that generation gap. Now we can get to the actual plot of this movie.
Oh my God. This is so...
Tim and Ken.
So Tim and Ken are two cool dudes in the 1970s who ride motorcycles.
Is it 70s?
It's a movie came out in 1974.
74,
baby.
You're right.
Yeah. They're dressed entirely in denim. They both have mustaches and long hair, and they ride motorcycles.
Tim looks like knockoff Tommy Chong.
I thought that Ken looked like knockoff John C. Reilly.
Ken?
Ken's the one that dies. He looks kind of like knockoff John C. Reilly.
Yeah, I see it. And then Tim, the one who doesn't die, looks like a mashup of knockoff Cheech and Chong if they were like the same person.
Yeah. And
like
so
both of them in the same person, but wish.com version.
Yeah, I guess they're in like the Jesus movement is the
sort of.
Yeah. So yeah. They go in to talk to the preacher. They go in to talk to Estes, and they say, hey, we want to talk to you about Jesus. And Estes is like, well, that's fantastic. I'm a preacher. I love to talk about Jesus. Are you guys out soul winning? And they're like, no, we want to ask you about biblical prophecy. We have this book here from a different preacher, and he lays out all of these prophecies that we can't really understand from the Bible because we you know, just can't understand it that well. Which, on its face, seems like an extremely reasonable thing for them to go in to talk to a preacher about.
Yeah, like we're motorcycle hippie dudes who are really into Jesus, but we're reading this book about Jesus and we don't really get it. Let's go find a preacher and see what he thinks. This it still makes sense at this point.
It does, but what doesn't make sense to me is Perkle's response to them is extremely hostile. Just unnecessarily so. Just unnecessarily hostile, and he's basically just saying to them, well, are you guys saved by Jesus? And they're like, well, we believe in Jesus. I don't know if we're saved by him. And he's like, if you're not saved by Jesus, you're going to hell. And they're like, well, we don't really believe in hell. We believe that hell exists on earth. And this was interesting to me because this idea that hell exists on earth, this is a concept that kept coming up throughout the movie. And I felt like this was a movie that was made to disprove the idea that hell exists on earth. It's made to debunk this.
Yeah, very much.
This idea. And this wasn't an idea that I was familiar with being a popular one in Christianity. So to me, the fact that they're bringing this up just felt kind of like off the wall. But I guess if you were raised in this, you would know.
I think the other thing that maybe you're missing for context is that these were the popular topics in Christianity at the time.
Right.
So there are hot topics in Christianity right now. I think one that everybody would know about is the whole, like, what does it mean to treat LGBTQ people in a Christian manner? And you all know my opinion on that, I hope, which is that God made LGBTQ people, and the correct way to treat them in a Christian manner is to literally let them live their lives in peace and have all the protections that anyone else has. So, another hot, like, theological topic in Christianity right now is Calvinism is kind of having a resurgence, and people are fighting over Calvinism. And then also the other ex-fundy podcasts are currently fighting about ransom atonement versus penal substitutionary atonement, which is basically, we know that Jesus died on the cross to save us, but how specifically? Like, how did it save us, and why did it save us? And did God pay off the devil for our souls, or did God pay off himself for our souls, and that whole thing?
It's very midichlorian inside baseball stuff that I, yeah, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing I enjoy knowing what the different arguments are, but I don't really spiritually engage with any of them because In my thinking, I don't really know that it matters how it happened. It more matters that it happened. And I don't see why thinking the wrong thing about how it happened would affect anybody's eternal destination. Anyway, the rapture and prophecy and the idea of is hell literal, those were the really big things. Those were the hot topics at the time. So those are the things that people who are nominal Christians, not super fundamentalist, but really interested in Christianity would be wrestling with at the time this movie was made.
So
he made a movie to address like the hot topics of the day.
And so one of the big hot topics of the day was, is hell real and will you be tortured there forever? What does it look like? Versus the other side, which is saying hell exists on Earth and it's our job to make the world a better place. And then when we die, if we do a good job at that, we'll go to heaven. And hell is really more just like a grave, not a...
So Tim and Ken actually referenced something that I think I've referenced on the podcast. They are discussing when the New Testament has a couple different words that end up getting translated as hell in most English translations of the Bible. And the two words that are most that I know of that are most commonly used are Sheol, S-H-E-O-L, and Gehenna, which I think is G-H-E-N-N-A. But those two, the argument is that Sheol references a grave. It just means death. It doesn't mean eternal conscious torment in hell. It means you die. And then Gehenna was the name of a trash heap outside of Jerusalem where the trash was burned. So the question is, when Jesus said you're going to go to Gehenna, did he mean your trash or did he mean you're going to get burned like that trash gets burned in hell? So
interesting. Okay.
So like this is very related to the interpretation of those Greek words is really related to what Tim and Ken are in Perkle's office to be discussing. Perkle gets really sassy with them.
He does. And they're
yeah, and he's like, well, let me ask you, have you read the New Testament in Greek? Because I have. And they're like, no.
Of course they haven't. Oh, man.
So there's like a confrontation. They get pretty snippy with each other. And Tim and Ken are like, you know what? We're done with you. So,
I mean, to be fair, he was really rude to both of them.
Well, like, but to be fair to Perkle, they came in wanting to hear. They wanted him to tell them what they wanted to hear. And when he didn't, they got mad.
Yeah. I mean, like he invites them. He says, you guys should stay for my sermon. I'm preaching a sermon in just a couple of minutes. You guys should stay for it. And they're like, well, what are you preaching the sermon on? He's like, I'm preaching a sermon on hell. And they're just like, no, thanks.
No, we've had enough of your views on hell. We're out.
Yeah.
So Tim and Ken drive away on their motorcycles. And the next scene of the movie, Perkle has begun his sermon. And he is preaching his sermon on hell to a packed congregation. And it's like voiceovers and cut scenes back and forth. You'll hear him still preaching, but you see a scene of Ken and Tim riding their motorcycles down a pastoral road somewhere, probably in the middle of Mississippi. And yeah. Perkle pronounces, at this moment, someone is headed for a burning hell. And like, as that's the voiceover, Ken is riding his motorcycle. He's like dancing around. He's showing off. He's standing up on the bike. He's like, and Tim is riding behind him. Like, this dude is an idiot. So Tim takes a break from like, he like stops for a minute and then gets back on his motorcycle and keeps driving. And he comes around a corner to see, oh no, Ken's bike crashed and mangled. And Ken violently decapitated in a puddle of blood.
Once again, we get the exploitation film.
And this is about the point where I realized, oh, this is not a Christian movie like Sheffy. This is a movie that is made by an actual filmmaker.
Yeah.
Because, like, yes, the special effects are cheesy and, like, extremely 60s exploitation film style. But I realized, like, oh, this is a filmmaker making this. Like, this is someone with experience. This is someone who has made a movie before who is making this.
The version of the film that is uploaded to YouTube, I think it was like ripped from like an old and degraded film. I can only assume that the version that was shown back in the 70s, the film quality was much better.
Yeah.
And like the color quality was much better and it was less grainy and less like fuzzy. Mm-hmm. So when you see like the head decapitated, that is kind of blurry and kind of fuzzy. So I don't know if that looks better in higher definition.
It could look worse in higher definition.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking if we saw this in like in actual good quality, it might just look totally hokey and totally fake. But if it's kind of blurry and kind of just grainy, then you can sort of get it. Because you just put like a veneer of grease over it. So rather than calling going to find a payphone to call for like the police or call for an ambulance or something, because his best friend just died.
This is where the movie goes off the rails.
Tim turns his bike around and goes back to the church.
He comes up on this scene. He gets off the bike. He's standing there looking at the body of his friend in considerable shock. And then he doesn't scream. He doesn't cry. He shrugs his shoulders and goes back to the church.
And then he gets to the church and goes in and says, Ken died on a crash. Where is his soul right now? And the preacher turns to him and says, well, your friend is burning in hell right now as we speak.
I wrote down the quote on this. So Tim walks, he's clearly in shock. I do think they undersold his reaction a little bit. But Tim walks through the back doors of the church and Perkle is aware. I guess Perkle kind of figured out what happened and he stops his sermon to talk to Tim. Tim says, Ken just died. Is he burning in hell? And Perkle says, I'm afraid he is. Chances are he's burning in the flames of hell right now. That's a good Perkle, huh?
Yeah.
But again, instead of sending someone to call 911, I don't know who got poor Ken off the side of the road. I'm really disturbed by that.
I'm imagining like a family in a station wagon just coming around the corner. Oh no, there's a biker with his head chopped off. Like,
it's just, I know. Did this just happen in the 70s?
I don't know. The 70s were wild.
Maybe listeners who lived through the 70s, if you'd like to chime in and clarify whether this was common practice back then, we'd love to know. I kind of doubt that it was. Anyway. Perkle offers Tim a front row seat for the rest of the sermon so that he can get saved. And the entirety of the rest of the movie is with its flashbacks within flashbacks, but the framing device is the rest of the sermon that Tim's going to hear.
Yeah, wait, hold on. Okay, so did we talk about the part where Moses is in there?
I do not think we have talked about Moses' first appearance yet. We would be remiss to skip it.
I think we skipped over it because I think it was sometime in the beginning when he was talking about.
Well, we cannot skip over it.
Yeah, because he said something about like, well, some people say hell doesn't exist, but hell is mentioned in the Old and New Testament, and therefore it exists.
And I think Moses is the first biblical flashback, right?
Yes, Moses is the first biblical flashback. I like when we saw this, like at first when I saw it, I thought it was just going to be like an exploitation film with
Jesus.
Like that was very 70s. But then it got even more than that because it got to be like they actually started shooting scenes with biblical characters. And man, the costume and the makeup budget for this film, I'm telling you guys, Moses looks like a mall Santa in a bathrobe.
So the first like biblical flashback scene that we get is Moses dealing with a rebellion during the Exodus, and there is a part where the people doubt Moses's authority, so he opens up the ground and the ground swallows some of the people. And someone kindly counted this for me. Another podcast who did an episode on this counted the people. It is 18 cuts of individual people falling into this hole in the ground and screaming.
Well, you know, 18 is the in Hebrew numerology is the number that stands for the word life. So I mean,
don't think this was on purpose, unfortunately.
No, like it's funny. Like he's like he like raises his hand or something, and then you hear basically it'll show somebody's face, and you'll hear like this really cheesy canned thunder sound effect. It'll be like And then like they'll show people just like shaking around and the camera will shake a bunch. And then like they'll put like flames up in front of the camera and then show just people falling. It's so hokey. It's hilarious though. It's so incredible. It's so fun to watch.
And just to remind you, all of the extras are white people with incredibly thick Southern accents. But they did go to Israel to shoot on site. Which is, I think that's pretty interesting. Maybe they blew the entire movie budget on transporting 50 like Southern church members to Israel to be extras in all of this.
Or maybe, here's another thought, is that they wanted to go to Israel and visit Mount Sinai, but they couldn't fundraise for the trip, so they said, we're going to make a movie and we're going to do a shoot there, and that's how they fundraised for their trip to go there.
You know, I can buy it. Okay, so now that we have rectified the mistake of skipping Moses, are you ready to go back to the plot?
Yeah, let's go back to the plot, because this was just so incredible. I mean, like, I was looking at Moses. Moses is one of my ancestors, man. And I just felt like they did him so dirty. He said he almost said y'all in this movie, man. Like, Moses was like, God commands y'all. God commands y'all.
Probably.
I mean, you know what?
I would not have been surprised.
They could have had Jesus in the movie, because, you know, Jesus, it was said that he supposed, like, his accent was like a yokel accent. He was like a very plain spoken guy. That was his whole dealio, is that he was very plain spoken, not at all like high spoken. And that's one of the reasons why he appealed to so many people, because he was a man of the people. Mm-hmm. He spoke like a man of the people.
So, okay, let's hop back into the plot. So Tim and Ken gave up an opportunity to get saved in Perkle's office. They went driving. Ken got decapitated. Tim came back to the sermon. Tim gets on the front row seat of the sermon. Perkle very rudely tells a guy who just lost his best friend that his best friend is burning in hell. Like, what an awful thing to say. So,
has that ever happened to you before, where you lose somebody and somebody says that they're going to hell?
No, because everybody I knew was Fundy.
Have you ever seen that happen to somebody?
I don't think so. I hope not. I mean, I have not with a recent loss. I have heard people say, oh, my whoever relative died back in 1995 and I know that they weren't saved, so I know that they're in hell. Like, I've heard people say that about their own relatives.
Man. Oh.
Okay, so Perkle is preaching about times in the past that you would have had an opportunity to get saved and you chose not to. There is a flashback scene of Tim and Ken walking down the street and a street preacher hands them a gospel tract, which is, it is an interesting little scene because you've got this guy, and if I'm remembering correctly, he's wearing a massive bow tie. And he is standing on the street and he's giving out tracts to this group of people who are all walking by. Hello, good evening. Nice to see you. I'm so glad you're out tonight. May I hand you a gospel tract? Jesus loves you. Let me hand you this information. And the guy who is handing them out is like very, very bougie. And Tim and Ken stop to speak with him. There was a really neat shot. I want to talk about this because it's my favorite camera shot in the film. As Perkle is doing a voiceover about times that you had an opportunity to get saved and turned it down, there's a close-up on Ken's face, and you see the street preacher reflected in his sunglasses.
Yes.
I just thought that was neat. Because in so many Christian movies, you don't see, like, shots that you would see in real movies. So I thought that was a really neat shot. And it's testament to, oh, the person who made this is an actual filmmaker. So after the flashback of Tim and Ken rejecting the street preacher, we get another biblical flashback during Perkle's sermon. So the next biblical flashback, it's King Belshazzar arriving in hell. And this is the first time we get to see the demons.
This part was amazing.
I laughed out loud seeing the demons. These guys cracked me up.
Did you see the part where they were describing the demon? And
yes,
and there was like a pan up scene where they're just like, it's like a, they're describing it, it's like a it has goat legs and four goat legs and the body of a man and just like a horrible, horrible beast. And they like pan up and it's clear that they're showing like a horse from the way down. And then they like hard cut to a different angle, like panning the rest of the way up the body, and it's a person.
And yes. Because they didn't have the budget for the makeup costumes. Didn't have the
CGI. I mean, they couldn't get like a centaur costume or something from a Spirit Halloween.
Evidently not. So Pergle is giving all of these illustrations of people in the Bible who he believes went to hell. And one of the first ones is King Belshazzar. So King Belshazzar arrives in hell and Pergle is going on and on about how no one will love you in hell. And even if your friends and relatives are there, they will hate you because your wicked ways led them to hell. I don't know where he got that from. That's traumatizing. But also, I don't know where he got it from. This is illustrated by, so Belshazzar ends up in hell, and then a former friend of his also ends up in hell, and Belshazzar is like, great, fantastic, I have friends here, these creepy demons can leave me alone. And the former friend is like, I hate you, you led me in paths of wickedness, and that's why I'm in hell. Anyway, this is kind of setting up for how the rest of this movie is going to go.
And they have like, I don't know how they shot this. Because the video quality in that we watched was so poor. I don't know how they shot this. It was very interestingly shot. Like and like the makeup that they had on all the people, it looked like they smeared like grime all over everybody's face.
It looked like some kind of oil to me.
Yeah, like just like grease or.
I mean, it really looks like they just took dirty motor oil and put it on everyone's face. I know that's probably not what they actually did, but that is really what it looks like.
RIP to the skin of everybody who
I know that like yeah, that just makes me feel so gross.
They're about to be breaking out is what they're about to be doing. But my favorite thing that he said was, he said, there is no floor in hell. You will just keep falling and falling and falling. So you like, there's no ground. And I'm just like, well, if there's no ground, then what does this horse-legged thing walk on? How can it be like stabbing you with this trident if it doesn't have any ground to stand on?
Checkmate. So this is actually one of the more triggering parts of this movie for me, because that is, so the IFP teaching about hell is that it is in the center of the earth. So because they don't know very much about science,
like physically in the center of the earth.
Right, because it's hot down there. And because if the earth is always rotating, then you're technically always falling, because I don't really think they know how gravity works. but that's what the IFB believe. So the IFB believe that before Jesus, there was two parts in hell. One part was called paradise, or Abraham's bosom, and then the other part was called hell. And we'll get to this when we talk about the rich man and Lazarus. So all of the Jewish people and the people who believed in Jesus, even though he wasn't here yet, went to Abraham's bosom. And then everybody else went to hell. And then when Jesus died, he took the keys of hell and death, and he went to hell and he rescued all, while he was in the grave for 3 days, this is what he was doing. He went to Abraham's bosom, he rescued all of the Jewish people and all the people who believed in Jesus, even though he wasn't here yet, and swooped them all up and took them to heaven. He fought with the devil in hell and he won his first victory over the devil. And then he went to heaven, where he did some stuff. This is going to make you really mad. I don't know if I want to tell you this.
No, please. Oh my God.
So, you know, in the first temple, they had the mercy seat with the angels over it, and then the high priest had to go sprinkle the blood on the mercy seat to make the yearly atonement.
Go on.
So when Jesus died, he went to heaven, and he sprinkled his blood on the mercy seat, which had been transported to heaven after the people on earth lost it. And he sprinkled his blood on the mercy seat to make the forever atonement.
What?
Yeah. This is why Jesus is called the Lamb of God in the Christian world.
Question. Huh. No, but how do they get, like, so heaven, they're thinking of heaven and hell as like actual physical places in.
Yeah, what else would they be?
The. So when. Oh my God, now I'm just remembering that you told me about the microphone to hell.
Yeah. So they believe that before Jesus died, everybody who died went inside the earth, and then Jesus fought the devil and released all the good people from the inside of the earth and took them to heaven, and then Jesus came back to earth and went back inside of his body and rose again from the dead.
So if you're just some rando who lived 3,000 years ago in China or something.
Yeah.
And you're just like, hey, I'm some guy. I live in China. I'm just chilling here with my family. Got a farm, growing some rice or something.
Inventing paper so that white people can later take the credit for it.
Inventing the toothbrush, that sort of thing.
Inventing a lot of things, yeah.
Inventing magnetic compasses.
Right.
Thank you, China, for inventing so many fantastic things. And then you die, and then you're going to be literally in the center of the earth. And then one day Jesus shows up and says, you didn't believe in me. You can't come with me. You're just going to be tortured forever. And you're just like, believe in you. I don't know who the fuck you are. And then he's just like, sayonara, Sammy.
Yeah.
And what?
Yeah, that's it. That's the belief.
Okay,
which is one of the like top three reasons that I left that theological world.
Yeah, okay. So other question.
Yeah.
How is it that Jesus can sprinkle his blood on the mercy seat to do the forever atonement if in the book of Genesis God specifically forbade human sacrifices?
Because Jesus wasn't human. Well, because he was fully human and fully God.
But he's still human. He can't have human sacrifices.
I don't know. Plot hole?
Plot hole. Yeah. Sorry. Checkmate, Christians.
So, okay. So we got way off track. But we were in the biblical flashback of King Belshazzar getting thrown into hell. An interesting thing I wanted to note about that is that kings and queens are shown multiple times during this, and that kings and queens are still wearing their crowns in hell, which raises some interesting metaphysical questions.
Well, they believe that hell is a physical place.
Right, so where did the crowns come from? Did they disappear on earth?
Well, maybe you're buried wearing the crown.
If you're buried wearing a crown, it would make sense that you would show up in hell with it on.
Wait, so but you also, show if up you in go the to hell wearing the clothes that you... Okay.
But if you're okay, but if you take die, notes. You immediately go wherever you're going to go. There's no like waiting period. So if somebody who was a king died and they didn't put the crown on him to bury him for like 3 days, does that mean the first 3 days he's in hell with no crown, and then 3 days later it just like magically appears because they did the funeral?
Or maybe he died wearing the crown.
So it could appear and disappear multiple times.
So here's a question. How many people in hell are like in hell wearing like a hospital gown with their asses out?
I would assume a lot of people.
Yeah, like there'd have to be a ton of people. Same with heaven, I guess. Although in heaven, they probably have like a Gucci store or like a
you know. No, it shows heaven later. Everybody gets white robes in heaven.
Boring. I hate neutral aesthetic.
Me too. So after the flashback of Belshazzar, we get another hell scene while Perkel is still talking. We see Kin with his head reattached being escorted into hell. And Tim is kind of at this point, Tim is on the front row during this Perkel sermon. And Tim is kind of apparently hallucinating Kin being escorted into hell. Not quite clear. Jack Hiles makes his guest appearance at 2110 in the movie.
Yeah, you know what? I felt like I was the DiCaprio meme, you know, when Jack Hyles made an appearance on screen.
Yes. What did you think? Have you seen videos of him speaking when he was that young? Did you have any feelings about that?
I thought that he was very clearly had an extreme comb over and was very balding and doing his darndest to try and hide it. Like he had like a tornado of hair.
Yeah.
Atop his head.
So this being released in 1974, I believe it was filmed in 72 and 73. So Hyles would have been in his late 40s, not yet 50, filming this. It is always interesting to me when I see videos of him as a young preacher, because I feel like his vibe is very different. But that may just be me.
Very snake oil salesman-y.
Extremely. He looks like he wants to sell you a monorail.
He looks like he wants to sell me a Ford Pinto. Like a used Ford Pinto that's been recalled. Don't tell anybody that they explode.
So I feel like Hyles, he went from looking like a young traveling salesman or used car salesman type to looking like a grandpa pretty much overnight. Because this is in the early 70s. If you see videos of him in the early 80s, he all of a sudden looks like the grandpa that he looked like for the next 20-something years.
Maybe having David Hyles be his son aged him prematurely.
I just think it's interesting because I have seen so little of him looking anywhere between those two. I need to put together a timeline of his photos.
Maybe it's like the Vladimir Putin thing. You know how Vladimir Putin can't get Botox anymore, and so now he looks like his face melted in the past 6 months?
Yeah.
Maybe it's like that kind of thing where they stopped making whatever miracle cream Jack Hyles was using to keep himself looking young.
He doesn't have a lot to say. He pretty much, he's on screen for maybe a minute. He says that hell, he's just there as a talking head to like supplement whatever point Perkle is making in his sermon. This is interesting because Perkle is a Southern Baptist. So this is also during the time of Hyles' career before he stopped associating with Southern Baptists. Hyles had already left the Southern Baptist denomination and the American Baptist, which I think is what First Baptist Church of Hammond was. But he was still associating, and in 1974, he was also still associating with Bob Jones University and Liberty University. So this is a really interesting time in Hyles' life because it's before he broke fellowship with all those people. Hyles basically just says that hell is one of his primary motivations for doing things, and that he would be really lazy if he didn't think that people were dying and going to hell, but that's something that motivates him.
Yeah, he said, if hell wasn't real, then I would stop preaching right now. And never preach another sermon.
Mm-hmm. And then the plot continues. We see Tim in a different outfit still being preached the same sermon to. So I think what they are telling us about the plot is that Tim went to hear Perkle preach on hell multiple times at multiple different churches. Because for a while he's in like his motorcycle riding outfit. And then it shifts and he's in a different outfit and there are different people sitting around him. And it like does that multiple times during the rest of the movie.
So it takes a while for him to finally go and get saved. I assumed that this was the same sermon, or maybe he's just preaching the same sermon to multiple congregations because this is what he does. He's a bit of a traveling evangelist.
That's what I think it is. He's preaching the same sermon in multiple places so that everybody can hear it. And Tim is following him around and going to different performances of this same sermon because Tim is still not quite convinced about all of this. I think this would be a good time to go take up the offering and come back and keep working through this movie.
This movie, okay. This movie is a mess. It truly is a mess, and it only gets messier. But really, the real crazy is still to come. So make sure that you guys tune in for that. This will be really awesome.
Hey, Sadie here. If this is your first time listening to the Leaving Eden podcast, make sure you go back and check out episode 57. It's a primer episode for new listeners. That episode tells my personal story and gives you all the terms and information that you'll need to know going forward. Also, check out our cult true crime series, The First Family of Fundamentalism, so that you can get the whole cult story. If you like our show, you can support us by joining our Patreon, where we have extended and uncensored episodes as well as other bonus content available. You can also join in the discussion in our Facebook group. That group is called Eden Exodus. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tell your worst enemy. The Leaving Eden podcast is a fully independent podcast, and we really appreciate your support. Now, back to the show.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
We are back from our break. Sadie, this is like this movie, it was never really on the rails, but this is where it just goes truly into insane degrees.
Maybe we should say this is where the movie continues to spiral.
Yeah, it gets hella gross here.
This is the gross part. We are going to be talking about maggots. If you are not going to be able to handle that, I'm giving you a minute to go ahead and skip. Okay.
Yeah, go skip like a few minutes ahead
because we are not going to be able to handle talking about this for real long.
This is the wild part that where he goes into describing specifically what happens to you when you are in hell.
Right. So the scripture reference that Perkel is referencing is "the worm dieth not." He is talking about when you go to hell, you're falling forever, you're burning forever, you are being tortured, and the worm dieth not. And how Perkel interprets that is basically that there will be maggots crawling on you all the time. So there, as he is talking, there are multiple incredibly close, detailed shots of maggots crawling on people's faces, like real live people. And having reviewed the footage, there is not that much information about this film online. Like, there isn't like a page where you can go read about the making of The Burning Hell, surprisingly. But I think it was real maggots. I don't know how they could have done, like, pulled off the special effects otherwise. Because you see, like, a live person's face who is clearly, like, flinching and trying not to throw up because they're an extra from a church in Mississippi and not a paid actor. And there are just, like, live bugs crawling over their face.
Yeah, it's like Fear Factor, almost.
Exactly.
I mean, if I go to hell and Joe Rogan's not there, I'm going to be pissed. So...
Oh, I don't think you have to worry about that. I don't think that'll be a problem.
No, you go to hell, and what it is Joe Rogan's there, and he's like, here, eat these goat testicles. And I'm like, what do I win if I eat the goat testicles? He's like, no, you just have to eat the goat testicles. And that's hell.
So these poor actors are just, you see the people on screen and their eyes are completely scrunched closed, their mouths are closed, and there are actual live bugs crawling in and out of their ears and noses. It is pretty gross.
I mean, those reactions were, you could tell when the reaction is legitimate.
Yes.
Like Ken's or Tim's reaction to his best friend Ken getting decapitated horribly in a motorcycle crash. Not the best reaction.
That's a bummer.
Random church members getting maggots on their face and having to like deal with that when they're obviously very very real reaction.
Yes. I feel really bad for these people, to be honest.
All in a day's work for the Lord.
Yeah, and I was raised with this teaching. The IFB actually believe in giant worms, not maggots specifically. But I was raised with the idea that giant worms would be crawling all over you, like, and like squeezing you and hurting you. But this like didn't snakes. Bother me, huh?
Like snakes?
Yeah, no, yeah, but worms, specifically earthworms.
Where does this, is this in the Bible anywhere?
Yeah, where the worm dieth not and the fire is not quenched. I can look up the reference. Hang on. Mark 9:44. Let me see. I can give you context. I read my Bible on my computer more than I do in a Bible now because I'm always doing something for the podcast. So I'm Mark 9. And if thy hand offend thee, cut it off. It is better for thee to enter into life maimed than having two hands go into hell, into the fire that never shall be quenched, where their worm dieth not and the fire is not quenched. And if thy foot offend thee, cut it off. It is better for thee to enter halt into life than having two feet to be cast into hell, into the fire that never shall be quenched, where the worm dieth not and the fire is not quenched. And it goes on and on. It's basically Jesus saying, like, if you feel like you're who have a compulsion to hurt other people, it is you need to not do that because you will go to hell.
Makes sense.
Which is fair, I think. Also, this would be one of those verses where people are arguing about whether hell means a grave or whether hell means a spiritual state of being or whether hell means a burning actual place where you go. Let's see. So moving away from the maggots, Perkle at this point, he is continually breaking the fourth wall. There are like three or four times during the movie where he like stops, breaks the fourth wall and looks straight into the camera and says, "Does this shock you?" And I just died laughing every time. Does this shock you? So, so we're getting to some more biblical flashbacks. They are like hard and fast at this point in the movie. There is a story about Herod. Herod comes up on some people in the desert, and this is not the Jesus Herod. This is like the Herod before the Herod that killed Jesus. So Herod comes up on some people in the desert worshiping Jesus, and he is not about it. And
is this the part where they're playing the auto harp?
Yes.
They're playing an auto harp and singing American gospel music, like American
for
spiritual
Jesus
song.
In like
for Jesus.
27 BC or 27 AD.
Yeah. And they literally are standing there with an auto harp. Like, this, I don't know why they, I mean, they might as well have been like, they could have showed up with like a piano
or
like an organ, like an electric organ. They could have showed up with a Hammond organ.
I know.
Had a guy there with an accordion, maybe some bagpipes as well. Just
the whole band together. The best part of this scene is a woman asks someone else, like, "What are you doing?" And the other person's like, "Worshipping Jesus of Nazareth." And the woman who asked the question goes, "Jesus of Nazareth, who is he?" Jesus of Nazareth.
They're all so Southern.
And that was that was like my best Southern accent moment of the movie. And then it is immediately followed by one of the guys who is a Jesus worshiper is doing something resembling like a British or maybe a transatlantic accent, which was interesting. Interesting contrast. And then Herod's corpse gets devoured by worms alive as everybody watches. I don't know if that one's in the Bible.
They were casting this movie, I think. They probably cast like the men as like real actors, and the women, they were just like, whoever shows up, we'll just throw in some extras. That's kind of the impression that I got. Like, the women are all just random church members, and the men are like B movie actors. Yeah. Actors that they really needed, that like the Screen Actors Guild was really not given them major roles. So they had to.
Well, the director, Ron Ormond, he was really well known for using washed up Western actors in a lot of his movies.
Oh, my God.
So people would get like kind of chewed up and spit out by the Western movie industry. And then in both of his earlier exploitation movies and then later in his Christian movies, he would use these actors and give them work. So we have to keep moving on with the plot of this movie because we are at the story of the rich man and Lazarus. So this is what I was talking about with the Abraham's bosom, all of that. This is where we get all of that. So this is a story that Jesus told. There's a very rich man and there is a beggar at his gate named Lazarus.
This is a story from the Bible.
This is a story. Yeah, this is a story that Jesus told in the Bible. And there's a lot of argument on, is it a parable? Like, is it a sermon illustration? Or is this a real story that, like, did Jesus mean it literally? Because when Jesus, so you know the story of the prodigal son, or at least you've heard of it.
Yes.
That one is considered a parable. That, so Jesus told this story, but even the biblical literalists agree that he was making up a story to prove a point. This one, they argue over. Was this a real story that Jesus was telling, like this actually happened? Or was Jesus telling, was this another made up to prove a point story? The rich man is cruel to the beggar, Lazarus, who is outside his gate. The rich man goes on to throw a big party. At the party, people are talking about Jesus and they're all pretty mad about him. The high priest Caiaphas is mentioned. They pronounce Caiaphas as Caiaphas. Which I have never heard before.
Also, Pontius Pilate is at this party.
Pontius Pilate. So, Caiaphas just cracked me up because, like, everybody, all, like, most Christians would be familiar with, like, who Caiaphas is because he is the high priest that later is part of how Jesus gets killed.
Wait, so. Here's the part that I don't get, though. So, because we watched Passion of the Christ, and the story is that Pontius Pilate's wife became a Christian, right?
Or she had a vision. Pontius Pilate's wife had a vision that he shouldn't kill Jesus.
Oh, okay. So if Pontius Pilate was there with his wife, she wouldn't have been just like, hey, man, like, Jesus got some good things to say. I've been listening to him. He got some good things to say. I've been following him. Like, that wouldn't have happened. Okay.
Right.
I was.
So, yeah. So the high priest is being mentioned. I just want to note that I would bet good money that it was iced tea in the wine glasses in the scene. That's it. That's the note. So Lazarus dies outside the gate of the rich man's party, and he is carried to heaven by the angels. The Hallelujah chorus plays in the background. He has gotten a shave and a haircut. This is the only happy moment pretty much in the entire movie.
So I need to discuss this, the hair and makeup on this beggar, because this beggar's beard and hair, it's like a ring around his face. You guys know, like, the monk haircut where it's like a ring of hair around your head? Imagine that, but rotate it 90 degrees so it's like a beard and then it goes over the top of your head. And it's the same, like, it's not like, because, like, if you have a beard and if you have hair on your head, the hair on your head is a different texture from your beard usually. Like, and That's true for almost everybody. Like, the beard hair is going to be much coarser and the hair on your head is going to be much, like, smoother.
Not but Lazarus, apparently.
Lazarus, it's like they went and just, like, got some wool or something and then just, like, taped it all around his. It's like he's wearing a parka. Like, you know, the fur lining.
Yes, it looks like he's wearing a fur lined jacket. The funniest thing to me is that, so Lazarus dies and then you see, like, his spirit kind of rises up from his body, which is pretty well done. And then there is a transition cut, like one of those fade cuts where he gets a magical shave and haircut. And that one was another thing that just cracked me up.
I mean, he got a real lineup, though. Like, the beard looked...
Yeah, it looked nice.
Like, yeah.
So Lazarus is carried by angels to the throne of God, who comforts him and tells him what heaven will be like. It's interesting to note that God looks exactly like Moses, just in a white robe.
I thought that was Abraham, that he had him...
No, that's God.
That was God.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Of course you thought it was Abraham. That makes sense.
Yeah, I...
Like, no, that's God.
That's God. God looked like freaking wild, man. He looked like his head was very, like, I remember his head being very square shaped.
Well, like, don't you think it's the same guy who played Moses?
Maybe.
Although, or at least the same beard and hair that was loaned to the next guy.
I feel like there would be a huge theological problem if you have the same actor playing God and Moses, because that would be like saying God was Moses. Anyway. This is literally a graven image. Like, this movie is literally, like, seeing that, you're not used to seeing God in movie form, like, in person. Like, I know they did the movie with Morgan Freeman, but this is like God in a movie where they're saying this is God from the Bible and this is a Christian movie. That is literally making a graven image. That is,
it's done surprisingly much in Christian movies, because I'm thinking through, like, all the Christian movies that depict God now. It's several.
It's the literal definition of idolatry. It's true.
So Lazarus has been carried to heaven. Back at the rich man's party, the rich man suddenly keels over and dies. Perkel proclaims from the pulpit, he was dead.
They never explained how he died, though.
I have to assume he just, like, had a heart attack or ate some bad food or something.
Yeah, I'm just...
This is really interesting. Speaking of going off the rails and Caiaphas. So Caiaphas, the high priest, shows up to this guy's party. Caiaphas visits to proclaim, and he, like, stands over this guy's dead body, which has been, like, laid out on a table at the party, and he proclaims to the assembled partygoers that this rich man has gone to heaven. And I don't know. I am not the most educated person on this, and I would certainly want you to correct me if I'm wrong, but this doesn't seem like Jewish death traditions to me.
Absolutely not. So if you
die at a party, you are not going to have your rabbi show up at the party in liturgical garb to lay your body out on a table and stand over your body and proclaim that you have gone to heaven.
No.
Okay. Thank you for confirming what I did think there.
It's even worse than that, because this guy's not a rabbi. This guy is a priest from the temple, which means that this man is a Kohanim. He is a Levite, probably.
So one thing is that he can't touch a dead body, right?
He cannot go anywhere the f- near a dead body.
Oh, God.
You're, like, not allowed to do that. Second of all, the going to heaven thing, like, they...
That's not a thing that you guys say.
It's not a thing for us.
Like, in Christian traditions, if somebody dies who was truly a righteous person... It's not uncommon for someone to say, and lots of people have said this to me about my dad, like, it's not at all uncommon to say, well, we know that he is in heaven, or we believe that he is in heaven, or, you know, we have the hope that we will meet him again one day in heaven. Like, all of those are perfectly correct things to say to a Christian who has experienced loss when the person who died was a Christian. This is not what Jewish people do.
Absolutely not.
And you have different traditions. Like, one of them is saying, may his memory be a blessing. But you don't make presumptions on what somebody's eternal destination was ever, right?
No. And also, like, eternal destination is not like a... That's not really a thing that we focus on. And that, like, it's... Yeah. This scene, to me, I was just like, this is very clearly a Christian-made movie.
Right. And I was very, like, I don't pretend to know everything, but I definitely know that the high priest should not be interacting with a dead guy. And I definitely know that it is not Jewish death tradition to, like, claim that you know where somebody went after they died. So after the high priest comes to really f*** up his job, apparently...
Yeah, he's not very good. Oh, here's the thing that pissed me off to no end about this, is that this guy's like, the priest is like, I know I haven't seen you with the temple lately, but you give us lots of money, so that's cool. I was just like, what the fuck you guys? Like,
yeah.
They got to get one in on us.
And like, also, like, church attendance is not the thing in Judaism that it is in Christianity.
No, but this movie's made for a Christian audience and they don't actually know any of that stuff.
Right.
They call it K-Iphas.
K-Iphas. I know like church attendance is a thing for you, but it is not the, it is not treated the same way as it is in Christianity.
No, like.
And this guy is like going at it from the Christian point of view, which is just not like God. He's the high, this is, you're depicting the Jewish high priest. Could you have done 5 minutes of research?
Like, this is literally the high priest from the second
like
temple.
Like, he has the breastplate
King
on.
Solomon built. King Solomon built this temple, and this guy is the high priest of this temple, and you're treating him as he's like some podunk minister who's equivalent to that. But I guess every podunk minister thinks that they're equivalent to the high priest from Solomon's temple.
So, I could go off on that, but I don't think I should because I don't think we have time.
Oh, man.
Okay, I will. All Christians think that they are equivalent to the high priest because Jesus was our high priest because he's the one who took the blood to be sprinkled on the mercy seat in heaven. So now Jesus is the high priest and we are all priests. Sorry.
No, I mean,
so like the, yes, every
the seal's been broken, Sadie. Like there's just like this stuff doesn't shock me anymore, sadly.
But yeah, but I still feel bad saying it.
I think it's funny at this point. It's like
this is the other reason I let you get away with so much blasphemy because I know I'm going to do it back to you at some point, and I got to build up the good faith credit.
No, you know what it is? It's like, you know, in The Little Mermaid, when Ariel gets taken up to have legs and she's like in the castle and she's combing her hair with a fork. And you're just like, that's not what that's for. That's how I feel whenever Christians are trying to do Judaism.
So after the Caiaphas debacle, Caiaphas.
I don't know. This is like his thing. Like, this is your thing. You're supposed to know all this.
Yeah. And he's also, I need to point out that Caiaphas is in full, what is it called? He's got the breastplate with the 12 stones for the 12 tribes and the black stone and the white stone in it.
Yeah.
He's got full priestly garments on.
Like regalia.
Right. Which is, I don't know if they just walked around in that. That doesn't seem right to me.
I don't think so. Like, I think that's like temple stuff. Like you right, only that's like in the tabernacle.
Right. Because specifically that breastplate was used to like get yes and no answers from God.
Yeah, I don't know. I might be wrong about that. I don't remember the specifics.
We'll circle back to this when we talk about the Christian reenactments of the tabernacle.
Oh, God.
Which I have been to. Which I am sorry about. So the rich man, Lazarus has been taken up to heaven. Caiaphas says that the rich man has gone to heaven, but he has not. He is in hell. He is getting tortured by the devil and he is begging for his family to be ministered to so that his family won't also go to hell. That's in the Bible. God says to the rich man, they have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them, which is in the Bible. The part that is not in the Bible is where Pergle decides to engage in some really weird extra scriptural extrapolation. Perkle says that the rich man wanted his family not to go to hell, but it wasn't because he loved them and didn't want them to get tortured. Perkle says he wanted them not to go to hell for selfish reasons because he knew that if his family members also went to hell, they would blame him for leading them there. This is a new one for me. I haven't heard this one.
This is like, how much extra like stuff? How much like extra biblical stuff do people add in when they're like, how many embellishments do people usually like to add in when they're talking about hell? Because I know we talked about the Passion, you had the guy talking about all the embellishments with the thorn going through Jesus' eye and the extra torture and like
right the like and like stuff. Being hit 39 times has a numerological meaning.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one doesn't have that much that struck me as extra scriptural. So the whole thing about nobody, if you see anybody that you know in hell, they don't love you and they'll blame you for not being, for leading them there. That is extra scriptural.
Although that's kind of logical, you know, like you can't be in hell just chilling with the homies, can you?
Right. But most of this is pretty much from the Bible. Now, it's interpreted in a way that I wouldn't interpret it. But that was the big thing that really stuck out to me is like, oh, this is not in there. After all of this rich man and Lazarus bit, we go back to a sermon from another preacher. So it's another talking head coming in to confirm Perkle's point so that he can give verses about souls being able to feel pain. And this is cut in with scenes of Ken screaming in pain in hell. And then there are the closing bit here is kind of, it's multiple scenes of famous Bible murderers in hell, which is interesting. I mean, it's not wrong. I don't know why if you're already dead, you would be afraid of somebody killing you. Because
yeah. Who was the guy that he had like chopping people's heads off?
That's the killer of John the Baptist.
He thinks you're John the Baptist.
Right.
And he's going to cut your head off.
Like. Right. So background for you, Gavi. John the Baptist was Jesus's cousin, and he showed up years before Jesus became well known, and he was preaching like the Messiah is coming. I know who it is. He's going to be here. He was like a weird aesthetic kind of guy. Aesthetic with an E, not with an A, the other meaning. And he ate locusts and honey and wore animal skins and was like a wild man in the wilderness. And he was extremely controversial. So John the Baptist like really got a lot of attention because he was weird. And the Herod at the time didn't like him very much. And most people didn't like him very much. And an evil woman sent her daughter to dance before Herod, and Herod was so enthralled with her that he said, I'll give you anything you want. And the evil woman told her daughter to ask for the head of John the Baptist on a silver platter.
Why? Why?
Because like, why she was evil that? And she wanted the guy who was hyping Jesus' hype man dead. So Herod was like, yes, I'll do anything. And he had the head of John the Baptist delivered to her on a silver platter, which has inspired some extremely metal Christian art because John the Baptist was a wild man. So he's got like crazy hair and a crazy beard. And yeah, it's inspired some really graphic Christian art of his head on a silver platter.
So this guy's the guy that killed John the Baptist.
Right. And this is also okay. Yes. Okay. Yes. But in Viva La Vida by Coldplay, your head on a silver plate, that's where that lyric comes from.
Huh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's a scriptural reference.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So, Perkle is talking about, so he has like a little scene of Cain and Abel, and he's implying Cain is going to be in hell, ready to hit you with a stick, just like he did his brother Abel. He talks about Ahab and Jezebel, and other people who killed people in the Bible. He says there are thousands of people he could mention, which I don't know if that's correct. I don't think there's 1,000 murders in the Bible, but I don't have time to go through and count. Anyway, he talks about the killer of John the Baptist, and there's this whole scene where the devil is talking to Ken, who is now in hell. And Ken is like, why is this dude over here staring at me with the crazy eyes? And the devil's like, hey, that's the killer of John the Baptist. And now he thinks everyone is John the Baptist. And the killer of John the Baptist in this interpretation is now going around hell trying to find more people to kill. The quote from Perkle that cracked me up is he's talking about like all of the people who would have gone to hell for the murder of John the Baptist. And the quote is, the fella who chopped off the head of John the Baptist was also involved. It was also involved, which is I lost it.
And then he's like, and as bad as you think it is, it's a million times worse.
Worse, yeah. So, Tim is in the pew at the revival service, and he is having this very vivid, like, he's like hallucinating along with Perkle's sermon, I think. And as Perkle is preaching, we're seeing these scenes of Ken in hell getting stabbed in the stomach with a shovel by the killer of John the Baptist. And this is maybe like the second most graphic scene other than Ken's decapitation earlier. Poor Ken. This
what
guy really gets
maggot scene. The maggot scene was kind of
that
graphic.
Was gross, but I would say this is like more graphic. This is more gory. And this is pretty gory. I don't know. The guy who killed John the Baptist doesn't decide to cut Ken's head off. I guess one decapitation was enough. I don't know. But he stabs him in the stomach with like a garden shovel. And Tim is hallucinating this along with Perkle's sermon. And he's in the pew at a revival service. And he's like wincing and thrashing in pain because he's imagining that he's the person getting stabbed in the stomach with a shovel.
He needs to like lay off the magic mushrooms or something before he goes to church, man. Can you imagine eating a bunch of magic mushrooms and then going to a Baptist revival service where they're
preaching? I do not want to imagine that. I would not like to experience that.
Bad time. Wow.
No, thank you. Mm. So after all of this, Tim gets saved. That's the end of the movie.
Question. Are Christians able, are like fundamentalist Christians able to make a movie where at the end it isn't somebody getting saved? Like, is that the end of all of their movies? Is somebody gets saved at the end?
I mean, at the end of all rom-coms, it's two people kissing, right?
Okay. I mean, I guess you're right. I guess it's genre. So
right.
It makes sense. At the end of every Western, they ride off into the sunset.
Right. Or at the end of every action movie, they kill the bad guy and like patch up their wounds and like all walk off together, save whoever was going to get rescued. So yeah, it makes sense. One thought that I had, I am extremely disappointed that Ghost has not made a music video using footage from this movie.
Is that what they do? Do they do like...
Not really, but I still want them to.
Maybe Cardinal Copius hasn't seen it yet. Maybe he's not familiar with this film.
You know, I feel like I would be more surprised if he hadn't seen it than if he had seen it. This is a classic.
I'm trying to think of what my finishing thoughts about this film are.
How did you feel watching it? What were your feelings going through this?
I was very entertained by it. So yes. Full disclosure, I watched this movie on Yom Kippur when I was fasting.
Questionable timing.
Questionable choice right there. I was fasting. I not only was I not eating, but I was also not drinking water or any fluids for like 25 hours, which is no fun. And also you're supposed to think about like it's the Day of Atonement. So you're supposed to like think about how you're going to be a better person in the future. And watching this movie about people getting scared into getting saved by Jesus is not really what I would recommend doing on that day, because it put my head in a weird place. Like the next night I had a dream where somebody got decapitated falling off of a train, and that was really unpleasant. And I fully attribute that to watching this movie on a completely empty stomach and then going to a party where I just like ate a ton of food. But yeah, I don't know. I think how I saw this movie was very much colored by that experience.
You know, I wasn't going to stop you from watching this, but that was an interesting choice of day to watch this movie.
Well, when was I not doing anything? And yeah. I was like, this is about redemption. Maybe I'll watch this. Ah, man. Just like on the day when you're just like, why am I Jewish? Why do I have to do this fast? Why am I Jewish? And then you watch this Christian movie and you're like, oh, this is why I'm Jewish, because this is the
alternative. No, never mind. I'm good.
I'm good not eating, not drinking for a day. If this is the alternative, then sign me up.
So I guess I have a couple closing thoughts about this. First, I think this is really a testament to, I want to shout out to all of the people who saw this movie as little children, because as much as we as grown adults with fully formed prefrontal cortexes and all that have had fun laughing at it, and I got more laughs than triggers out of this movie for sure. And as much as that was fun for us, I know that there are surely many people who watched this movie as children. And I want to, I don't know, I guess hold space for the people who were affected by this, because I feel like this would be a very different experience seeing this as a little kid. That could be genuinely upsetting.
Yeah.
Man. And the, I truly believe that it is abusive to expose children to graphic and scary ideas of hell at a young age. I don't think I saw this movie as a little kid. I think I have seen it before, but maybe as a teenager, but not as a little kid. I know, though, that this has surely been shown to a lot of small children, and that's really upsetting to me.
This movie, obviously, it's not going to be rated. But right. If they were going to rate this movie, what would they, rate this R, or would they rate this like PG-13?
I don't think so. I think this could, there's no swearing, there's no sexual content.
But there's a lot of gore.
There's a good bit of gore.
This would definitely
get. And this also came out before the modern rating system, right?
Right. So it was either like regular, or it was either R or not.
Yeah.
So
I feel like at the time, if it had gone through the rating system, it might have been rated. It might have been an R-rated movie. I think now in 2022 standards, it would probably catch a PG-13.
Yeah, but if it's catching a PG-13 standards in 2022, then that means the fundies can't see it.
Well, you can't. Well, a lot of fundies saw Passion of the Christ. There was actually just a conversation on Twitter the other day about people taking their little kids to see Passion of the Christ.
Yeah, that's, do not sign me up for that.
That is a bad idea. Please don't do that.
Bad idea. It's also a racist movie, very racist movie.
Of course, we were too fundy for that because there was a butt in it. So, the butt of God. So.
Holy booty. Holy badonkadonk.
Stop. I'm extremely tired and I've had way too much caffeine. I cannot do this. So I do want to hold space for people who saw this too young, and for people who saw this and it was presented to them in such a way of like, this is the reality of hell. Because as much as I have enjoyed making fun of it, I know that for some people, it was probably not a fun experience the first time that they saw it. That being said, I'm really glad that we did this one because I think it opens us up to quite a few more movies in this Christian exploitation-ish genre. Because I have seen A Thief in the Night, which is an end times Christian movie, not related to this writer or director, but very similar in tone. And I think it opens us up to talking about maybe some more of these movies in the future.
So you know what movie people keep asking us about?
Which one?
Is the Left Behind movie.
Yeah, I don't want to watch that one again.
Or we could watch God's Not Dead.
We could do God's Not Dead, or we could do, I would love to do A Thief in the Night with you.
We could do a God's Not Dead marathon where we watch all the God's Not Dead movies.
Now that's the occasion for magic mushrooms.
Yeah. No, Kirk Cameron might make a Christian out of me yet.
Hey, gosh.
No, that's never happening. Thank you guys so much for tuning into the show. If you guys liked this episode, if this episode gets hella downloads, then maybe we'll do another one of these sometime soon, because this was a lot of fun. Next week, we're talking about exorcisms for Halloween. So that's going to be a super fun topic. We're going to talk about Bob Larson and his team of exorcism ladies. Like the what are they called? The Bob Larson Soul Squad?
I can't remember.
I don't know. They have some fancy schmancy name. And they go around and do exorcisms to people and knock demons out of them with the Bible. They hit people in the head with the Bible and the demons just fly right out. You can see it. We're going to talk all about that. That's going to be a lot of fun. If you like the show, if you want to subscribe to the show, subscribe on wherever you listen to podcasts. You can join our Patreon, which is patreon.com/leavingedenpodcast, where you will find a very extended and ad-free version of today's episode. You can join our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/EdenExodus. You can join our subreddit, which is reddit.com/r/EdenExodus. And you can follow the podcast on Facebook and Instagram at Leaving Eden Podcast, on Twitter at Leaving Eden Pod. Sadie, you want to plug your social media?
Sure. You can follow me on Instagram at Sadie Carpenter Music, on Twitter at Hell Yes Sadie, or on TikTok at Sadie Carpenter 1.
And you can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at GAVRIELHACOHEN. Thank you so much. You guys have a great day. Bye-bye. But old rolling river of time healed me in too many days. No regrets, no confusion.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.